Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
But good evening, Monde.
Good evening, my brother.
How you doing? Mr. Dlovo?
No, we're doing well, and yourself?
No, we can't complain. All is good. God is good. And I hope your day has been good.
Yes, it's been very, very busy times, but good.
Ah, lovely. Great to hear that. Now, we're talking to you because we want to just reflect, briefly on the 30 years of democracy in South Africa. This year marking, that 30 years. And of course, we do know that 1994 was the year in which South Africa became a free, independent, democratic country. And I remember that year vividly as though it was yesterday. I mean, a couple of years before that, Nelson Mandela was freed, I think in 91, if I'm not mistaken, from Portsmouth Prison, towering, coming out of that, walking with Winnie Madikizela Mandela, of course, with their fists up in the air, signaling a new era. It was only about 2 or 3 years after that, that this democracy was launched. Now we are sitting at the threshold of the seventh administration of this particular democracy, having gone through the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth administrations under the rule of the African National Congress. Please do reflect with us and share your insights of where we've come from, and where you see us at the current moment, and where you think the nation is going.
Thank you very much. It's always a privilege to just share a few thoughts with yourselves and the listeners. I think for starters, it's 30 years, and in terms of sociology, etc., 30 years is a generation. That's an important point to make. So we've had a generation of a democratic South Africa, and it has been sustained in terms of its democratic principles, such as free press, such as the ability for civilians to move freely in the country, civilians to also have a voice in the country, to also vote as well, to make your voices heard through the ballot. And we've got a representative democracy, which means we vote in parties that represent us, and they go in there into parliament, into the National Assembly, into the Council of Provinces, and they carry that mandate. But when they get in there, they collapse their partisanship.
Okay.
They become parliamentarians. So in other words, they've been represented there, they go in there, but their agenda in parliament, National Assembly, etc., becomes a South Africa first, not necessarily a party first. And so those processes then become very critical, because as we're going to see on Friday, they get into parliament, then they must nominate. So it's not obvious as to who's going to be speaker, president, deputy president, because of the parliamentary processes themselves. So it's not a given that certain individual will become this or that. I'm just strictly talking about process, not necessarily assumption based on numbers, just looking at process. And I'm highlighting the fact that that is still a democratic process that takes place even within the spaces of parliament. So I'm just highlighting these things to see the progression of democracy in those processes. And a lot of our civilians today in this generation may not even fully appreciate where the country comes from. One, number two, it also shows in the voter turnout. So we have 58% out of the 27-28 million who are eligible to vote, and we've got a population of over 60 million. So in real terms, less than 50% of the population is deciding for the majority. We need to be mindful of that. So there is a problem in terms of where civilians are, what they think, and some of them may feel like it does make a difference, but it does make a difference, because look at what's happened. 40% of the African National Congress at a national level, at some point they were dipping below 39%. So that is not by chance, right? It is intention of the voter right? So those who left themselves out of that process, you can see that the impact of the ballot, and it's right before us. So we need to then drive voter education and your democratic rights enshrined in the Constitution, unpacking the Constitution for ease of understanding for civilians, socioeconomic rights, and that's where we are today in terms of ensuring that we drive socioeconomic transformation. Mm-hmm. It's enshrined in the Constitution as well. So we've had this 30-year, a generation of democracy. Mm-hmm. We've seen positive movement in terms of the building of the middle class, in particular, the mm-hmm. black middle class, because black people were left out of the mainstream economy. And through democratization and through the Constitution and then through specific pieces of legislation, which then enabled the swelling up of the black middle class specifically through affirmative action, through broad-based black economic empowerment, through procurement, etc. And there's a host of them. And then the emergence of the Skills Development Act, the Skills Levies Act. There's all sorts of interesting tools that have come about which have created this black middle class in South Africa. So that is one of the positives. And of course, one of the many negatives since 1994 is the fact that poverty at the same time has deepened. We're the most unequal society in the world in terms of Gini coefficient, which is income inequality itself. So South Africa has become the most unequal society in the world. We're still struggling with economic growth and this whole debate between growth and transformation. Mm. Should you just focus on growth or just transformation? And our argument has always been it's both and together, right?
Yeah,
you've got to transform and then that will lead to growth in terms of our theoretical outlook mm-hmm. in terms of these things. Mm. And we know that when we transform a country, and I'm moving more closer to some of the touching issues where we've got to see more women advance in the economy. Mm. Why? Women have a special leadership ability that men don't necessarily have. They've got a host of them. One of them is the ability to take care of their household, right, at home. So they're able to do multiple different things, which means they understand the spin-offs between needs and wants, right, naturally. They know how to apportion resources. And women have that ability. They take care of everybody at home. So they've got unique skills. And we know that majority of our country today is women. Mm. If you look at our education statistics, we graduate more women than men as well. So we are seeing those shifts as well in terms of what's happening from a gender parity perspective in the country. I think that's also been positive. We're seeing the first black woman group CEO of a bank, First Rand Bank, Mam Mary Viragazi. She's the first black woman CEO. And she's there. And you've got others, Bidvest, the group CEO, there's a woman. Mm. In fact, half the board is a woman, is women. So you're seeing that also shifting in terms of driving transformation, which is inclusive of the gender debate and creating space for black women to also advance. So we've seen those movements. But the triple challenges that we face are the most important for us to try and deal with in the country. And on top of that is the structure of the economy. So you still have concentration of oligarchs in the system. So you always have three, four, five, six major players in almost every industry in South Africa.
Mm.
We still have to deal with that. So, a black business can emerge, let's say in the banking space. Already you are coming up against Nedbank, Absa, Standard Bank, those big commercial banks. So how then do you begin to even compete at that level? You look at the retail sector, even ShopRite is in our townships. The spaza shop space, they've moved into the informal space.
Mm.
So really be mindful of these things. There's so many challenges. But we've got to roll up our sleeves again and not wait for the next person to do it for us, because we've got to keep doing it for ourselves. And we're grateful for Mandela's leadership which averted a civil war in when Chris Hani passed away. And, you know, this generation doesn't fully appreciate what it took for him to push back that civil war. And he did it. Otherwise, our country would have been in a bloodbath because the looting started and black people were angry. It was very bad. But Mandela was able to avert that.
Yeah.
And then ushered in, you know, a rainbow nation at the time in terms of philosophy. And he did that. And maybe last point, Mandela used his influence at his age. I mean, he was over 70 and being a president. He knew that he couldn't do it beyond one term. And even at the middle of his term, already President Mbeki was brought in, you know, to start taking care of other responsibilities because he could tell, and there's no way I can sustain all of this. But that's a very good leadership lesson as well, and maybe a discussion for another time. But I want to highlight this thing before you come in, that Mandela would phone big business to hold them accountable, to say, so-and-so, I need you to do X and Y. He was good at that. He would call people on the phone, call people to his office and saying, look, we need to drive this agenda. I need you to build clinics here. I need you to build hospitals there. And he was doing that work behind the scenes, which is also incredible as well, because he could tell which people are influential and he needs to try and fast track, you know, that kind of thing. But the backlogs that we face in terms of socioeconomic transformation are massive. And, you know, once we begin to understand how big the backlog actually is, we'll appreciate that we still have a responsibility in the next 30 years to make sure that the country becomes a better place in the next 30 years.
Now, tell me, Monde, we are now going to enter into the seventh administration, lots of trading happening there. But could you just give us perhaps a synopsis, if you can, or highlight how are you looking into the next, say, 10, 20 years into the country? I believe personally that with 30 years, we truly could have achieved much more of what you mentioned. But do just if you can look at an eyeball into the future and see if it's possible to actually achieve much more than we have in the past 30.
I think it's definitely possible because the challenges are clear. So there's triple challenges. If you focus on the problem, because what are you trying to solve? You can't solve 10 things. So you've got to minimize what are you solving for. And that I think, number one, the triple challenges need to be up front and center as the defining problems of South Africa. And you know, people will maybe drag you towards the right to the market debate, or drag you to the left to the socialist, even maybe communist debate, and others trying to keep the middle ground. I think if you remove all the political jargon and remove all the political leftists and rightists and uptists and downists, you just stick to the problems that the country faces, which is the triple problems, which then create a mirage of other problems in the country because you start facing new problems. So a problem gives birth to another problem, and etc. So narrow down the problem statement in South Africa. Mm-hmm. What is our problem? So that, number one, will give us an indication of how then we'll dispense our resources in solving for those problems. Number two, who will be responsible for ensuring that those problems are being solved? And what structures are you going to put around there to ensure that that is achieved? So this seventh administration is facing that task. And one of the enablers of trying to solve the triple challenges is local government, but capacity of local government to deliver on basic services.
Yeah.
So now that kickstarts the network industries as well. So it's water sanitation, it's electricity, so it's energy as well, and everything that's got to do with basic services to ensure that we are taking care of the citizens at the most basic human level. Now, if that is not achieved and well-resourced and put your best people at a local government to ensure that they deliver on this massive mandate of transforming the country, then we're creating the wrong system in the first place. So private sector needs to come on board. They've got the skills. They've got even the financial muscle. They've got the networks and even the know-how in some of these things. You've got the public sector. At some point, a thriving networking sector, Transnet, logistics. Eskom was one of the best at some point. And, you know, there's some turnaround now that's happening there. So the green offshoots are there. The capabilities are there. It's the willpower.
The willpower.
It is just, it's the willpower, the sustaining of the agenda, which is really going to need decisive leaders who will make clear decisions and clear lines of accountability and consequence management and delivery, because that must be the theme of the seventh administration. We want to deliver a better South Africa from a public service perspective, local government perspective. And the private sector must also say, you want to deliver a better South Africa. In other words, we must transform the economy, right? Got to get more black players in, got to get more black professionals involved, because that opens up new markets, not just in South Africa, but even globally. So all these key role players must come together and say, you know, this is the outcome that we want. Then even religious institutions as well, the religious sector is quite massive as well. What role are they going to play in ensuring that we have better outcomes? Because our people are in churches. You know this very well every weekend. So you've got a role to play. You can't say, well, government responsibility is this and private sector is this. No, you work in the private sector or public sector, yes. But the space is the communities that you're part of. You need to play a role to mobilize this new sense of belonging, that this is South Africa, it's our home. It's our responsibility to build a better future for our children and their children and their children to come.
Well, I really wanted to actually delve a little deep, but, you know, time is always, always an enemy. But, Mr. Ndlovu, I want to thank you so much for your time. I think we've touched on a number of aspects from the past going into the future. You touched on the current situation and you really diagnosed, the things that need to be done to make sure that the country continues to be prosperous. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much and have a good evening.
Blessings. Thanks.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.